Hey, Al Scott here for MyHeroesThink.com. They sell beautiful 7-inch busts of libertarian heroes, Ludwig von Mises, Murray Rothbard, Ron Paul, and Harry Brown. I've got the Harry Brown one on the bookshelf now. Makes me smile every time it catches my eye. These finely crafted statues from MyHeroesThink.com make excellent decorations for your desktop at work, bookends for your shelves, or gifts for that special individualist in your life. They're also all available in colors now, too. Of course, gold, silver, or bronze. Coming soon, Hayek, Hazlitt, Carlin. Use promo code Scott Horton and save $5 at MyHeroesThink.com. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's anti-war radio. Still pretty much. I'm Scott Horton. It's the Scott Horton Show. And our next guest on the show today is Francis Nesbitt. He is Associate Professor of African Studies at San Diego State University and is currently a visiting professor at the United States International University in Nairobi, Kenya, where he joins us on the telephone now. Hi, Francis. How are you doing?
Good.
Good, good. Thank you very much for joining us today. Appreciate talking to you again.
Thank you.
Okay, so you have this very important article at Foreign Policy in Focus. That's FPIF.org, Foreign Policy in Focus. It's called Al-Shabaab's Savage Coming of Age and How to Respond. And, of course, that's a reference to the horrible attack on the mall in Nairobi, Kenya, a couple of weeks ago. First of all, can you just remind us or catch us up to date on exactly what happened there and the significance of it right off the bat as far as it took how many days, 4 or 5 days for the thing to end? And then if you can tell us how many killed, how many wounded, and just sort of give us an overall sense of the news from Nairobi before we continue about Al-Shabaab, please, sir.
Sure. On September the 21st, which is a Saturday, a group of militants walked into a mall, a very high-class mall, and just started shooting at both security guards and civilians. This attack, they walked into the mall and holed up there for 4 days. Over 60 people were killed, up to 70 were killed. They were shooting randomly into the crowds, you know, men, women, children. And they apparently had access to some other heavy weapons within the mall, which they used to keep the Kenya Defense Forces from taking over the mall for over 4 days. So it was quite a siege. And eventually, when the siege was over, it turned out that the Al-Shabaab, which is a group based in Somalia, it's an Al-Qaeda-associated group based in Somalia, they took responsibility for the attack and claimed that that the attack was revenge for Kenya's invasion of Somalia in 2011. Kenya was forced to go into Somalia because of this cross-border attacks on tourists, on Western tourists at the coast in 2011. And so Kenya joined the African Union mission in Somalia. This is a mission that is supported by the West and the United Nations. And it's designed to pacify parts of Somalia, including the capital city. Al-Shabaab, which is this Islamist group, which is associated with Al-Qaeda, said that they had attacked Kenya because of the Kenyan involvement in the African Union mission. So this is a background, a very short background to what happened mm-hmm. on September the 21st at the Westgate Mall.
Okay, now, one of the things that's most notable, and there's a lot of them, but one of the things that's most notable about this story, Francis, I think, is the presence of so many foreigners among the Al-Shabaab fighters there. Not Somalis at all, but Americans and Brits, and who else with them there?
Yes, Norwegians, and it's a, well, what's one of the important things about this, you're absolutely right, is that this is an internationalist jihadi group, and it has become an internationalist jihadi group over time. Initially, Al-Shabaab started off as a nationalist group within Somalia with the goal of overthrowing the Somali state and taking over and establishing an Islamist state under Sharia law. But today, more recently, especially after the AFRICOM troops, the African Union in Somalia troops, and the Kenyan troops have managed to pressurize Al-Shabaab within Somalia, they have evolved, you know, metastasized into this internationalist jihadi group rather than a nationalist group within Somalia. They are now more interested. They have recruits, they have funding, they have training, they have equipment from jihadi groups that are more interested in attacking Western targets in the region rather than overthrowing the Somali state following those nationalist views. Mm-hmm. So, yes, absolutely. Today, the Al-Shabaab boasts that it has over 100 recruits from the European Union and 40 from the United States. And we do know, indeed, that several of the militants were internationalists, that is, holding passports. One of them, for instance, was from Norway, and others were from Britain, others from the United States. So it's not yet absolutely clear who was involved, but it seems that a significant proportion were international.
Mm-hmm. Well, now it's very interesting that, first of all, is this attack necessarily itself an indication of that internationalism? I don't just mean in the fighters who carried it out, but as far as their goals, because previously, back a couple of years ago, in fact, they had attacked the soccer game or an audience watching a soccer game on TV in Uganda as revenge for a Ugandan government attack on a Somali soccer field. And that was, you know, seen as more of just a tit-for-tat nationalist response against the Ugandan nation that was, you know, occupying with their military, occupying Somalia. And then I noted also that you wrote in your article that Ameriki, as they call them, one of these Americans who was a leader of Al-Shabaab, who was recently killed by the more internationalist types, he was, I think you're saying, he was more of a Somali nationalist than these internationalists, even though he was an American, and Godain, their current leader, is a Somali. Do I understand you right?
Yes. There was a power struggle within Al-Shabaab. There's been an ongoing power struggle between those who are nationalists, who want to overthrow the Somali government and take over and, you know, govern Somalia using the Sharia law. And there's the other faction led by Ahmed Gondani, which is internationalist. That is, they are more interested in attacking Western targets in the region rather than just overthrowing the Somali government. And what has happened over the last 2 years is that the Gondani faction has taken over. That is, they have defeated in a very vicious and very hardcore way. They have defeated the nationalist faction. And Al-Ameriki, who is sometimes known as Al-Hamami, who was an American, you know, American-born jihadi, he had some problems with the leadership of Al-Shabaab under Ahmed Gondani. particularly Ahmed Gaddane is known to be a very ruthless leader, and his implementation of Sharia law in the areas that he controlled in Somalia even caused the Al-Qaeda Central to complain about this, about his leadership, his extreme implementation of Sharia law. And it's thought that Omar al-Hamami was one of the more moderate jihadis who did not support this kind of beheadings, stonings, amputations, and very extreme implementation of Sharia law in Somalia. So yes, there has been a power struggle, but it seems this this last attack shows, in fact, that the extremist faction, the internationalist faction, has won the war within Al-Shabaab, and that now the group has generally gone international. It's become internationalist, and the nationalist faction has been marginalized, and so it's become more of an international threat rather than just a national issue. You know, Al-Shabaab has been marginalized by AMISOM, which is the African Mission in Somalia, within Somalia. Militarily, it has been defeated in Mozambique, or in the Mogadishu, rather. It has been defeated in Kismayo and other port areas. And so, as a result of this defeat, it has changed its tactics, and now the tactic is international. Yes, so yeah, definitely there was a power struggle, and one faction has won.
Mm. Well, now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're a threat to the West, just Western targets in the East, right?
Yes, currently, well, yes, they are a threat to Western targets in East Africa currently, but the fear is that because many of the fighters have international passports, have links to people in the West, the fear is that they could export this kind of tactic that they're using to the West, because this tactic has already been used in Mumbai in 2008, it was used in London, it was used in Spain. This is a new tactic that uses a small group of activists, a small group of highly trained and motivated activists who are willing to die to attack, landmark targets in major cities in the world, and just cause mayhem. And so the fear is that these activists who are being trained today, these militants who are being trained by Al-Shabaab, many of whom have these international passports, could actually export this abroad.
Right. Well, you know, I don't mean to contribute to fear-mongering, and I certainly wouldn't want anyone to, you know, be unfairly, implicated by anything like this, but it seems to me inescapable, kind of a supposition that we could have a problem among the Somali American population centered in Minneapolis, but not necessarily all there. But there have been somewhere on the order of 20 or a couple of dozen or maybe more American Somalis or Somali Americans, whichever hyphen, who have gone back to Somalia to take part in this thing. So it's obviously, you don't necessarily need a bunch of training to just get a rifle and use it if they wanted to stay here and take that part of the war to the United States. And this was something that the Obama administration even admitted. I forget now if it was the Washington Post or the New York Times, but one of the two most official Oregon newspapers there, where they said that, yeah, actually, we're afraid that the longer we carry on this, you know, our part of the war in Somalia there, the more likely it is that Al-Shabaab will, in essence, grow up and become more of a danger and break from a regional danger into an international one. And then, lo and behold, here we are at the end of October 2013, and by messing around and messing around all these years, they finally begun to turn al-Shabaab into a little mini al-Qaeda, something which I'm sure al-Shabaab wants us to think of them as being, right? I mean, the whole point of an attack like this is to get a reaction. Are they trying to get America to invade, or they're trying to get America to do what? They're trying to get Kenya to do what in response to this attack, do you think?
Yes, you're absolutely right. The goal of such an attack is to get Kenya and its allies, including the United States, you know, first the United States, to overreact and to attack Somalia and to attack Somalis in Kenya and the East African region and even abroad, in order to mobilize support for the organization. Right, as I mentioned earlier, they have been marginalized militarily. They have been defeated militarily within Somalia, at least in the bigger cities, and pushed out of the bigger cities. But then it changed its tactics, like many terrorist groups do, like Al-Qaeda did and various other groups did, from nationalism to internationalism. And the internationalism means they get more money from abroad, they get more recruits from abroad, if they can demonstrate that they can attack Western targets in the region. So this is their current tactic, that is trying to attack Western targets in the Eastern African region and probably abroad. You know, they're hoping that they can go abroad. Using their recruits from America, from Norway, from England, people with passports, Western passports, who can travel around. And so this is the new al-Shabaab. You know, they've metastasized into something different because of the pressure that Kenya and AMISOM were able to put on them. Right. So unfortunately, you know, places like Kenya and the United States and Europe are in a rock and a hard place because, on the one hand, their strategy in Somalia is working by putting pressure on al-Shabaab. But on the other hand, this has forced al-Shabaab to change his tactics and to go international, where they can use just a small group of people, you know, five or six militants, to cause mayhem in what we call soft targets, like malls or schools or hospitals and so on. And the problem is that this can easily be exported abroad.
Mm-hmm. And now, you know, it's funny. I have to bring up the irony of, well, and it was predictable enough. I forget exactly when it was last year, if it was a year ago or more, Francis, that the Kenyans, specifically of the AU force there, the Kenyans kicked al-Shabaab out of Kismayo and cheered their own great victory that, see, we've finally defeated al-Shabaab and they're no more and whatever, instead of knowing what everybody knows, that an insurgency will just melt away. All they have to do is not lose. And then, as you say, it was getting kicked out of Kismayo and being denied access to the charcoal sales and all that revenue that forced them then to look for international donors, start speaking the language that, you know, Saudi benefactors like to hear about internationalizing their movement, because the Kenyan move put them in that position where that was their only choice now.
Exactly, exactly. That's what I meant, that it's an extremely difficult situation where, yes, you could defeat them militarily, kick them out of Kismayo, kick them out of Barawe and other ports, and Mogadishu and so on. But that just forced them to internationalize their struggle, right? Because Kismayo, for instance, was a source of $50 million a year for al-Shabaab, right? They got this funding from extortion at the port. They got it from smuggling of charcoal, smuggling of arms, and so on. And so once they lost that source of funding, they were forced to find other sources, And the most obvious source, of course, was the international Salafist sources in the Arabian Peninsula, that where there is funding for those who can show that they have the ability to attack Western targets, particularly Israeli-related targets. Westgate Mall, for instance, where they attacked, was partly owned by Israeli. Several stores in there were owned by Israelis. And that kind of attack is a fundraising gamut. Once they show that they can attack this kind of target, they can get international funding. I mean, the whole question of funding is so important because, for instance, the traditionally, Al-Shabaab's funding came from Somali businessmen who had businesses in Nairobi, right, and other major cities in Kenya. These Somali businessmen, however, had created a kind of a situation where Al-Shabaab would not attack Nairobi, major targets in Nairobi, would not make a major attack on Nairobi because of these business ties. This was the thinking for years. That is, you know, Al-Shabaab is not going to attack Kenya. It's not going to do a major attack on Kenya. They can do small attacks, small drive-by shootings or lobbing grenades at security targets and so on. But they will not make a major attack on Kenya because many of the businessmen who supported Al-Shabaab were actually based in Kenya and had ties with Kenyan businessmen. But it seems today that this has changed. This attack on Westgate shows that something has changed. And this change, I think, is because of the Kenyan attack on Kismayo. Mm-hmm. And they are pushing Al-Shabaab out of Kismayo. So they need alternative sources of funding. They are no longer beholden to those businessmen in Nairobi. And therefore, they have found other sources of funding. And therefore, you know, the international community must deal with this new source of funding. And I think this is one of the key points in my article.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Well, and to end on the only piece of good news in there, Francis, very quickly here, could you please talk about how the minority Muslim population in Kenya have not found themselves at the receiving end of a bunch of anti-Muslim backlash, that part of the provocation has failed?
Yes, it does seem that the goal of Al-Shabaab, which was in fact to turn Kenyans against each other, we have a big Muslim population here in Kenya that has been marginalized for many years, for 50 years. The goal of Al-Shabaab and other groups such as Al-Shabaab is to marginalize these the Muslims. Right. And especially
it didn't work
Somalis
this time. I'm sorry, I got to interrupt
Kenya.
You. We got to go.
However,
it's Francis Nesbitt.
Hello?
Thanks very much, Francis, for your time on the show. Foreign Policy in Focus, FPIF.org. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Rocky Mountain Miners at RockyMountainMiners.com. Ever wanted to destroy the Federal Reserve System? Now's your chance. New free market currencies are making our fake government money a thing of the past, and good riddance. If you want to mine new bitcoins and litecoins into circulation, you need a computer set up to crack the codes to the new coins. Get the Prospector from RockyMountainMiners.com. It's ready to do the work right out of the box. Crack the equations, spend the money. Use promo code Scott Horton Show and save $100. Get all the info and get the Prospector at RockyMountainMiners.com. Hey, y'all, Scott here, hawking stickers for the back of your truck. They've got some great ones at LibertyStickers.com. Get your son killed, Jeb Bush, 2016. FDR, no longer the worst president in American history. The National Security Agency, blackmailing your congressman since 1952. And USA, sometimes we back Al-Qaeda, sometimes we don't. And there's over 1,000 other great ones on the wars, police state, elections, the Federal Reserve, and more at LibertyStickers.com. They'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at TheBumperSticker.com. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to talk to you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. In the book, Swanson explains what the revolution was, the rise of empire, and the permanent military economy, and all from a free market libertarian perspective. Jacob Hornberger, founder and president of the Future Freedom Foundation, says the book is absolutely awesome, and that Swanson's perspectives on the Cold War and the Cuban Missile Crisis are among the best I've read. The poll numbers say that people agree on one thing. It's that America is on the wrong track. In the war state, Swanson gets to the bottom of what's ailing our society. Empire. The permanent national security bureaucracy that runs it, and the mountain of debt that has enabled our descent down this dark road. The War State could well be the book that finally brings this reality to the level of mainstream consensus. America can be saved from its government and its arms dealers. First, get the facts. Get The War State by Michael Swanson, available at your local bookseller and at Amazon.com. Or just click on the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org.
Fact. The new NSA data center in Utah requires 1.7 million gallons of water every single day to operate. Billions of Fourth Amendment violations need massive computers and the water to cool them. That water is being supplied by the state of Utah. Fact. There's absolutely nothing in the Constitution which requires your state to help the feds violate your rights. Our message to Utah? Turn it off. No water equals no NSA data center. Visit offnow.org.
Hey, all Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all, QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1 ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks.